I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And today we got some serious rock and roll with one of my favorite bands of all time, Kickaxe. Now, if you haven't heard of Kickaxe, if you grew up in Canada, especially in the prairies in Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, Alberta, in the 80s, Kickaxe is one of the hottest bands, one of the hottest new bands to ever come on the scene. They toured with Judas Priest and Great White and the Scorpions and Metallica and Quiet Riot and Whitesnake, you name it. They kind of had the opening slot, Triumph. They had the old-time story of rock and roll of having it all and having it taken away and then getting it back, and a very, very roller coaster ride with the guys from Kickaxe. But they're back now. They're touring, working on some new music. And most importantly, they're going to be on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea Part 2 in January. Today, 3/5 of the original lineup, Victor Langan, bass player, drummer Brian Gilstrom, guitar player Raymond Arthur Harvey, are telling us what happened in the 80s when the band got to some pretty big heights very quickly and then sort of disappeared from the scene right at their peak. They're also talking about what brought them back together, why original singer George Kristen isn't with them this time around, and how they found new frontman Daniel Nargang. Once again, they got stories about the early days opening for Priest and Quiet Riot, Whitesnake, why they only did 3 shows with Metallica before that tour is over. And they're talking all about the making of their classic 1984 album Vices and how they got hooked up with Spencer Proffer, Pastor Records, how that was good and bad at the same time. Great, great show today, very honest. And if you haven't heard Kickaxe, Vices is the album. Go listen to it now. It's some great, great rock and roll. Listen to it after the show is done. Very excited. Here we go. Kickaxe on Talk is Jericho. Right here, right now.
30 days in the hole. Okay, so there's certain bands that affect your life. And for whatever reason, you never forget them. And for me, one of those bands is Kickaxe. One of my favorite bands. At 3 great records that released all within about 3 years of each other. And if you grew up in Winnipeg in the mid-80s, you liked Kickaxe. And I'm here right now with Kickaxe, 3 of the cats, Vic and Brian and Ray. And I'm really, like, seriously, all the stuff that I've done to be here with you guys, it's one of those moments in life where I'm like, this is awesome to be right here on with Kickaxe.
Right on. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, do you guys, you know, as you get older and we get older and you know, you play gigs and do what you're doing, but do you ever like sit back sometimes and go like, oh, like we had an influence on people's lives?
Absolutely. We think about that all the time, hopefully in a positive way.
And yeah.
Especially you, Chris. I mean, world star like yourself. I mean, that's flattering to hear, you know, from a superstar like yourself. And yes, you mentioned Winnipeg and that had to be some of our best times we've ever had in our life. Example, the Black Knight.
The Black Knight.
Judas Priest, the whole band and crew watching us at the Black Knight, and George drives in with his motorcycle.
Also, George, the old singer, used to ride a Harley on stage.
Yeah, kind of ripped Rob Halford off a little bit there, but hey,
it was
right into the bar anyway.
CBS Records promotion. That's digging back into the memory banks here. Yeah. We just released Vices. We ran into the Priest guys in Calgary like 5 days before coming to Winnipeg to do the debut of the album at City 92 FM there with Stevie Young and everybody. But CBS delivered a motorcycle, a Harley-Davidson motorcycle with the Vices cover art all over it. And they brought it from Milwaukee to Winnipeg.
Wow.
So it just arrived.
Nice sponsorship from Hardy. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was that day. And then priests show up at the old Winnipeg Arena. And they come down and Helford's waving a contract that says Kick-Ax is taken over from Great White. And the contract, I saw it. It said Madison Square Gardens. Hmm. And we just went, nah, these people are on drugs.
Was supposed to be our first show.
It was supposed to. Great White wouldn't give it up, though. They said, no, okay, it's bad enough. We're getting kicked off the tour. But we're not giving up. That we'll end there. So, yeah, we tagged up. It was Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the night after. Oh, well, suck it up. We got to do 35 dates after Madison Square Garden.
So. I think we mainly got that because of my black leather studded harness and my black shirt.
I'll do that. If you guys are getting into Kick-Ax, you got to go see the video for On the Road to Rock, where Brian has one of the greatest shorts and studded suspender combination you'll ever see. Lederhosen. But before we get into all this, like this is what we're talking about. Like, it's funny, one thing about the Black Knight, we used to hang out at this convenience store right near my house. It was called Shortstop, and the guy behind the desk, his name was Bob. And one time it was, I think it might have been after this time frame, he's like, yeah, I was at the Black Knight the other night and my friend says he saw Rob Halford kissing a guy. And we're like, bullshit. There's no Halford. He's not gay. Stupid. Yeah. Meanwhile, how do we not know he was gay? Right? It's so, and Rob, I told Rob that story. He's like, how did you not know, Chris? Come on, man. But that was the time back then.
Yeah.
The Black Knight and the heavy metal culture. But Kick-Ax, like we said, you guys had a lot of steam when you're talking about Harley Davidson putting on a promotion and Priest coming to find you. Because Vices is still one of the best records from that era.
Thank you very much.
Seriously, what led to you guys getting to that point? Because I know you had a long history in the bars and you guys were playing for years. But what finally, let's say like a year before that, led to you getting this big push from CBS and to leading to Priest and touring with Whitesnake and all these other bands that you went out with?
Ray, you want to take that?
We were always having the work ethic during the club scene here of rehearsing and writing new tunes all the time. So it was just, you know, we knew that's what we wanted to do. We weren't happy just being a cover band playing in Vancouver. We knew what we wanted to do was write our own stuff and get out there. And then Gary Stratichuk from Winnipeg approached us and said that he could promise us an international or a US Canada record deal.
He was the manager
mm-hmm. and he said he would manage us and get us that deal, you know, within a year's time frame. And if he didn't, then we could all just, you know, go our separate ways. But mm-hmm. we churned out, you know, multiple cassettes, I guess, back then of songs, demo tapes, like live off the floor at Mushroom Studios. We did about a dozen songs there plus more, and those were you know, given to Gary, and he chopped them around, and then it just snowballed from there. You know,
were you a Winnipeg band, a Vancouver band, a Regina band?
All three.
All three cities claim you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And they're all right. You know, right. They're all right.
Remember, started in Regina.
I was homeless, so.
Yeah.
Then you'll take any one of the three.
We were vagabonds for a few years till we picked Vancouver, and then Vancouver just couldn't handle Kick-Ax, you know, the agency people want. Yeah, we were too heavy. So we said, well, let's go to where the getting's good. And that was the prairies, our old stomping grounds. So Regina, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, Brandon.
Because Vancouver was more like, because you're talking about 82, 83, more of kind of a pop music, Brian Adams, Loverboy type scene here.
Yeah, Duggan the Slugs, that sort of thing, right?
Making it work.
Yeah. It's mostly Rubber Boy fans, yeah.
Rubber Boy.
Careful. Hey, but we're good friends. Yeah, they're great people.
Of course,
Another thing is that we just worked so damn hard and we partied every single night with all our fans. After we were done each show, they were all invited to our rooms. So we basically got to know everybody, and word gets around, and so every show we play, it's just packed, and they know they're going to party with us at the end. We just relate with them all night, and it was real. Like, I mean, we just wanted to mate with them.
It was the social media of its day.
Girls and guys.
Yeah.
No, but you're talking about the grassroots thing, because like I said, the fact that you had three cities all claiming you guys, that is a pretty badge of honor, shall we say, of showing how much of an effect you had on those fans.
Yeah. That's where you're playing, of course. We're from your city, right?
Yeah, well, we always saw Kick-Ax is from Winnipeg, man. Well, they're from Winnipeg.
Well, management's there, so gotcha, close enough, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
In the heyday, that would be the most truthful answer, would be Winnipeg was hometown. Mm. Yeah, because we were there for close to 2 years before the bottom fell out. Mm-hmm. Let's not get into that.
Yeah. Yet.
But yeah, it was home base with our manager. Gary was also Streetheart's manager, and we all know how that went as well. So we'll just leave it at that.
That's something that I'd like to just talk about, not getting too crazy, but there is another band like a Streetheart too. Streetheart and Kickaxe to me are the two bands that should have been worldwide huge. Now, listen, things happen is what it is, but still the quality of the music is amazing to this day. I listen to Streetheart all the time. I mean, Streetheart to me is equivalent of Loverboy, but even better.
That first album.
Sure.
Oh, it's just ridiculous.
But why does Loverboy get to where they got and Streetheart never got out of Canada?
Their manager.
Manager?
Managers,
same thing.
Plain and simple.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Political connections. Well, not to get into a long-winded thing, Gary Stratichuk was great and his heart was in the right place. He did everything he possibly could. I still have the Denny's napkin he wrote down his contract on. 90 days, I have a U.S.-Canada...
Is that what it was?
I've got the napkin. It was a Denny's in Calgary.
It was selling out every club. Yeah, and it was, the word was on the street.
It was a big buzz.
It was a really good buzz going on. So he caught wind of that and went, it
flew out.
Well, I'm
going
to get on early. I'm going to get on now.
Right.
And he just wrote that on a napkin. I said, if I don't get you a record deal in 90 days, we're null and void.
So his heart was in the right place. If you want to just jump to Loverboy for a second, a couple guys from the original Streetheart.
Right.
But they had Bruce Allen, who learned a thing or two with some guys named Bachman Turner Overdrive.
And yeah, made a few connections.
So he had that in his hip pocket.
He was a monster manager.
He was already.
Absolutely.
Plus a promoter, too. A big time promoter up here.
So,
right.
He had a leg up 10 times over on Gary Stratichuk, but that's not to take anything away from Gary. He gave it everything he had.
But I guess the things haven't changed that much. It's still like that to this day. If you have the right guy behind you, you're going to get the push and get the breaks of like, well, if you want Loverboy, if you want Bryan Adams to be on this bill,
there you go.
Book Loverboy 2 or whatever. Right?
Whatever it takes. Yeah, the leverage, exactly.
sure, exactly.
But then you have to deliver. You know, if you get that golden opportunity, you know, a band like Loverboy, they could deliver the goods and do a good show. So it's, you know, it's all the chances are laid before you. You have to make good on it.
Right.
Because if you blow it, well, then.
Well, sure. But that's the thing for you guys. You had Gary who came on, but then the Vices record, once again, being just that we have this thing, a perfect album. What's a perfect album? Every song has to be an A- or better. To the listener. And Vices is one of those records to me.
Thanks, Chris.
So
thanks.
When you're making it, did you get the deal with CBS, which that's the same as, was it Pasha, right?
Pasha, Spencer Proffer.
Quiet Riot Mental Health
is
on Pasha. So Spencer Proffer's the producer, also produced Quiet Riot, right?
Yeah. Which is nice because he had the number one album in the world and we were the next one in.
Wow, right after that.
So that felt pretty damn good. Mm-hmm.
Right? He flew to Edmonton. There was a -40 blizzard blowing there.
Well, that's right.
He flew to Edmonton. We're playing some hellhole. I don't know what it was called.
Yeah.
People were shooting needles in their arms, like tables right up by the stage. It was crazy.
And I remember the first song, I blew out my bass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the bass head up, like, it happens.
Put your foot right through it.
Something only a drummer would understand is how much of a bummer that is, right?
It's the most major drum that you need, the bass drum. But
you do.
The kick drum, as in this case.
That's right, exactly.
But a little sidebar to the situation with Gary Stratichuk getting us in with Spencer Proffer is Streetheart, the very last record they ever made was Dancing with Danger with Spencer Proffer in Pasha Studios. So that again leads back to the, you know, you have connections. So we were the benefactors of that connection. Sadly for Streetheart, they didn't set the world on fire with Dancing with Danger and then ultimately broke up and writing was on the wall, but we got the benefit of them blazing that trail into Hollywood. So,
because heavy metal was so huge back in that time frame, talking about 1984.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
The scene was on fire.
Yeah.
Our timing was impeccable, yes.
It was all you, Brian.
Yeah.
It was all you. You know, already typical drummer, he's already the hot shot of the gang. but when you did you guys fly to LA to record the record, or where did you record that album?
Yeah, it was in recorded Hollywood. And rehearsed pre-production in LA. Yeah.
So what's it like when you take five Canadian skids and stick them in Hollywood to record a rock and roll record?
Oh, yeah.
And the movie star condos were with all the movie stars and the
Valerie Bertinelli jumping in and out of her Mustang convertible at Paramount Studios across. We were at Gower and Melrose.
Yes. Wow.
And Astro Burger. It was quite the deal.
And to be clear, it was a van hauling a U-Haul. That's how we got down.
Yeah, but we had to drive because we couldn't leave the country without 22 cases of O'Keefe's Extra Old Stock to keep us lubricated in California.
Yeah, it's too weak.
Oh no, we could. Yeah, we honest to God, I'm not making that up.
We did have quite a few cases. I think
with 2/4. Yeah, I think we allowed for 5 2/4 each, and that included our sound man. And
they didn't freeze.
No, it got warm real quick. By the time we got to Tacoma, it was warm.
Just a little for our American brethren, a 2/4 is 24 beers, also known as a 2/4.
Take off, eh?
Hey. You know another word that Americans don't know? You guys are pro guys, parkade. Parkade is right.
Parkade, yeah.
No idea what it is in the States. No idea whatsoever.
So what is it?
It's a parking garage.
A garage. Okay.
Yeah, parking garage. It's not a parkade. I said parkade once. They looked at me. Another one was a Rye and Coke. You want a what? A Rye and Coke. You're drinking a Rye and Coke right now. It's not. It's a whiskey and Coke.
Whiskey.
No such thing as Rye and Coke. Yeah, exactly.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So what do you recall from that time frame, Ray, being there on Sunset Strip or wherever recording?
Well, just, you know, being in L.A. I mean, just that thing, just the fact that the apartments we're staying in, there was, they called the Oakwood Apartments, and it was
the place.
It was massive. I mean, just
A to W or something.
Yeah, the scale of it. Like, it went from A to Z, and then, you know, double A to double Z. Like, there was, you know
huge.
But yeah, it just covered a whole hillside, and I thought, wow, you know, just the scope and the size of the place really just blew me away. Really.
Did you guys go out to like the Rainbow?
Absolutely.
You know what? We lived at the Rainbow. They allowed 2 weeks for my drum tracks.
There you go.
Wow. I did them all in first take.
If you are and bed tracks, we were done in one night.
Wow. Because you guys knew these tunes back and forth.
Yeah, so I just, I think, okay, well, let's get going. I did one tune. He goes, okay, good.
Next one.
And I went, really? Okay, good. We're done. Let's go to the Rainbow.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks.
We got the
regulars.
Party for a couple of weeks.
Tiny Tim. Tell the story about Tiny Tim.
Oh, yeah. I was Tiny Tim's manager.
That's right.
There. Really?
He signed the Rainbow one night.
Yep.
Yeah, I bought my friend a strip club in Japan once. The strip club is yours. Sign it. So how did you become his manager?
Well, he was just sitting there, you know, Tiny Tim, you know. And then all the women were going by, and they weren't really giving him the time of day. So I was stopping the ladies, go, hey, Tiny Tim, man, Tiny Tim. Anyway, that was fun. But the funniest thing was Richie Blackmore at our table, because we were sitting with a hot chick, and he wanted this chick. And so he sat with me all night, and I got to talk to Richie Blackmore all night, and God, it was such an influence on my life. It was crazy. Yeah. And I was going, should I get into telling you how they influenced my life? And I went, no, I better not.
No.
You know, no, don't bother. Kind of thing, you know? But yeah, we spent a lot of time there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun.
And then let's talk about the video. Because for me, my first exposure from Kick-Ax was, like you said, every city had their local video show. And the one was City Vision, 97 with Terry. No, that wasn't Terry. It was Terry something or other. Not Terry David Mulligan. He's a Vancouver guy.
Right.
But they said, you know, here's the new band, Kick-Ax. And you're like, well, what is this? And then, of course, we'll discuss the video. This amazing video comes on, this great tune, On the Road to Rock. But there's a story. You guys filmed that in L.A. as well.
We did, Hollywood High School, yeah.
Wow, in Hollywood High School.
Classroom scenes, yeah.
In Huffer Teacher. So are you guys just showing up, like, just to come over here and go over there and do this and do that?
Oh, yeah, it's all directed. It's all, storyboarded and everything. Yeah.
So obviously, the CBS and Gary, at this point in time, they're doing some pretty good work for you guys.
Yeah.
We were on the top of the priority list kind of thing as far as budget goes at that point.
He had a lot of political clout with
he did because
with
of the
CBS Sony at that time.
Past success.
He was number one riding Riding High with Quiet Riot.
For sure.
And that's, yeah, after Judas Priest, we jumped to Quiet Riot World Tour.
I was at that tour as well. Yeah, but let's talk about the video, though, because I know you're at the Hollywood High.
Yep.
And tell us about some of the stuff that happened on that.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. One funny scene I did was I had a run and kicked the door down.
Right.
In the boardroom.
Yeah. Office room, right?
Snotty board members.
You remember that, right? Yeah. So I'm running in my boots and I slipped on the fog juice. And I, of course, there was no hinges on the door. Right?
Yeah, the smoke machine, fog machine, whatever it was.
And ran. I slipped on it and I just touched the door and it went. Just for a funny snippet.
We're in the shorts and
the second round that came in, they cleaned it up and I smashed that thing good. Yeah,
yeah.
I remember watching this. That guy's the crazy guy in the band. He's crazy.
Yeah, I probably was known as the craziest guy. Well, I was crazy at that time. I was insane. I think.
Sure, of course, drummer in a metal band.
That was my job, though.
Yeah,
I was a businessman as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as a businessman, I was told you got to be crazy. So it was crazy. Mm. But it kind of came natural and I got used to it and really started to like it. So
they actually told you this is your designation in the band.
Yeah, you're the animal. Yeah, exactly.
Animal, that's it.
But you're talking about, I remember something about the amps too at the video shoot.
Well, that's another sidebar. We were touring with Judas Priest. Oh, we got to make a video. So we played with Judas Priest, at Irvine Meadows.
It was Irvine Meadows, I think, yeah.
And that's when Spencer goes, he's there, and the Quiet Riot guys were hanging around, and he goes, oh, we got to get you in, and we scheduled a video shoot. So, yeah, this and that. So the Judas Priest guys are backstage, and, you know, we had some Marshall amps. Judas Priest had a whole semi-trailer full of extra ones. So they said, oh, you're going to need some amplifiers to make a proper heavy metal video. So they gave us 12 stacks or what? How many, Ray? You probably know better than
I can't remember how many there was. There was, I think, eight cabs or 10 cabs or 12 cabs.
I'm going 12.
I think it was 12 cabs. Yeah, just to give us a whole back wall.
Yeah, we had the back wall thing. And all compliments to Judas Priest.
You give a little tour of the amps, just, I remember, in the video.
Yeah, so I run my fingers down. Yeah.
It kind of says, hey, look what we got. Yeah.
So the priest lent you those.
Oh, yeah, those caps. Really super friends nice with them.
See, that's really cool, because what you mentioned earlier is that Halford basically saw you guys playing at the Black Knight and hired you to take over from Great White for whatever reason. I mean, that's a huge, that doesn't happen.
No,
very often.
Very rare, apparently.
He actually came down later and seen us there. He discovered us in Calgary doing a live broadcast.
Yeah, just 5 days so happened earlier. We were kind of playing, heading east across Canada.
We were shadowing them.
They were playing a show in Calgary.
Exactly.
Yeah. At the Saddledome that night. And somebody called in and said, you got to come down and see this band tonight. They do a lot of Priest and you just have to be there. So he came in and watched us. And then when our show was over, he came backstage and he's going, where's the Vice? Where's the Vice? Because I guess he was looking at my picture with a harness.
It was the very day that Vices was released in Canada, though. That's the weird part. And he kicked out our A&R guy from CBS Records.
Wow.
Kicked out all the record store buyer people, threw them all out, stuck his head out. I was standing right next to him and he waves his arm and he goes, miss, two bottles of champagne and don't let anybody else in here. Yeah, he ordered Dom Perignon.
Wow.
Two bottles.
And he toasted and says, you guys got the tour.
We're firing.
What?
What
tour?
We thought he was just drunk. Rhetoric, right?
Everything you read in the magazines is true. They're all on heroin.
They're all drug addicts.
Right? Drug talk, crazy. You just don't think so, right?
No, he meant every word.
Next
he said
day, our management calls, you got the Judas Priest tour. What the hell's going on?
That's once again, so basically, whatever shows you have, so when did the tour start? Like a week later? A month later?
A couple weeks later, we had some obligations to go all the way to Halifax with Canadian dates. Like, we did Toronto, Montreal, which is a whole other story with Alda Nova, like, in the middle of the night. But anyways, hanging with Alda Nova in downtown Montreal. Wow. Anyways.
Oh, in his town?
His town.
Apparently, they have some strip clubs there, from what I've heard, in Montreal.
I think they've got one.
Yeah, there's one maybe, huh? So what I've heard.
Yeah, but we'll leave that alone. We had some contractual obligations, Chris, to complete for CBS Records Canada for launching the record.
Right.
We ended up in Halifax, didn't we, guys?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we ended up in Halifax, and then we started driving down, like, through Maine or something.
Charlotte, Carolina,
North Carolina? Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Is that our first one?
So once again, you're like just a hard working rock and roll band with your van and trailer or whatever you had.
Yeah.
And you just rerouted from Halifax. We got to go down and meet up with Judas Priest. Yeah. That's like you got that's a really big deal. Like you're on a roll. At
we
this
didn't
point
believe
in time.
It. Right. Yeah. So we actually got on stage. Yeah.
Until I saw the Metallion, which was their mascot for the Defenders of the Faith tour. When I saw it, I went, yeah, this is real.
Yeah,
this really is happening. Yeah. Okay.
Did the people take to you pretty good as fans?
Yeah.
Really well. Yeah.
It was like.
Because you have that vibe. I mean, it's a Priest.
Because we had a great sound vibe too, Mike Martin. Phenomenal. Mm. Made us sound like a stereo.
Yeah. Mm. And they gave us all front of house in that's musician lingo. All the sound system.
Basically, they're not cutting your lights or cutting your sound or anything. Because a lot of times opening bands get like 50% of the audio and 50% of the lights.
Yeah, we didn't get the big subwoofers that Judas Priest had, you know, for the thunder.
Well, they used to put them on.
But that's understandable.
Sure.
They used to put them all over and just lay them straight down so it would shake the floor.
Yeah, they would put them right up against the foundation of the building.
You had to save that for the Mighty Priest.
Well, but that's fine. But like you said, they're being very gracious.
Very, very.
Because another thing for you mentioned having a great sound, another thing, one of Kickaxe's tricks up their sleeve or one of the best strengths of your band is the harmonies.
Yeah.
Vocals. Four-part harmonies in the band. Everybody sings except for Brian because you're too crazy.
He chimes in. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I just sing the lower.
So your bass is just
animal stuff.
You're going four parts, five parts at times.
Yeah. Just pushing it. Yeah.
A lot of that's one thing I love about bands from the late 70s, early 80s time frame. Everybody sang the band. Like we were watching in the last tour, I got the Best of the Midnight Special DVD.
Oh, wow.
Put it on the DVD player on the bus. And, you know, you're watching like, you know, Player. What you gonna do when she says goodbye? And everybody's singing. And it's like Hall & Oates. And three guys in Hall & Oates' band are singing. And like everybody's singing.
Eagles
and Journey and Styx and Foreigner. It was just such a great time. Like you had to be a great musician to be in a band. Yes, you couldn't just play and have tracks or whatever it is. But that's one thing that Kickaxe really had to me was all the harmonies.
Yeah, a lot of singing.
Right.
We focused on that purposely.
Yeah, that was just our sound. Yeah, things, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Styx, Queen, all that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Journey.
Yeah. Right. And you could hear that with the heavy background, heavy music behind it.
A lot of time was spent on that.
Was nice.
Yeah, to practice and rehearse that. Mm-hmm. So when one more thing I wanted to ask about the video. Did you guys have any idea that they were putting that thing at the beginning with what is this crap? What? Yeah. That's Kickaxe.
Yeah, that's a good quote about it right there.
I was actually staying at Spencer's house in Beverly Hills at the time.
I deny any knowledge.
So just as a quick segue, if you guys haven't seen it, but I really implore you to go watch it. So at the beginning, there's a janitor. No, there's like a bunch of classical Beethoven guys, and they want to hear what the new music is. And the big giant Kickaxe Vices Monster guy is like, I don't like this. And then the janitor's listening to Kickaxe on his headphones. Yeah. And then why that's Kickaxe? They're on the road to rock. And then you guys start playing.
Yeah,
So I'm assuming. Oh, dude, I watched it probably 100 times.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
I even showed it to my son. He's 15, and we were talking about the cruise and what bands are on. And he's like, "What's Kickaxe?" Well, here's Kickaxe. He's like, "This is great. I love it." It's like you're the same age that I was when I discovered.
Yeah,
Kickaxe.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I was saying, I was staying at Spencer's house at the time, and that's his voice.
That's Spencer's
Proper's voice.
That's Kickaxe.
The
puppet.
And he got the puppet made and everything like that. And then he brought it and showed it. Larry was staying there too. Vic and Ray and George were staying back of the compound.
Back in Burbank.
But we were hanging with him and he put it on and I looked at him and go, "You're not putting that on there."
It's already done, he said.
He said, he looked at me and goes, "It's already done." And I went, okay, bye.
Oh boy. There's so many things you have no control over.
For people that think that guys in bands have all the say.
No.
None.
You know, I mean, it's just, you know, like you said, can you imagine? You know, the video, and you see this come on, and you have no idea. And if it was your idea or you liked it or whatever, just have it dropped in you.
Totally.
It'd be nice if it just sort of slammed right in.
Now, but for a kid at my age, was that 84?
Yeah, 84.
So I'm 13.
Yeah.
And that
was what did you think of that intro?
Well, okay. So at that time, every band had an intro, right? Like the Twisted Sister was obviously the pioneers, right, and so you were expecting a Rat Wanted Man, like if there was a video beforehand, Motley Crue did a lot, Home Sweet Home, it almost made it kind of like more epic. So watching it now as a 48-year-old man, that's pretty cheesy, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But cheesy. As a 13-year-old kid, I thought it was pretty cool.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah.
And
oh,
all yeah. of our guys say the same thing. Why? That's kick-ax.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's good. It didn't affect our record sales.
It didn't. It didn't. Because Vices was a big hit in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in the States as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it did yeah. pretty darn good, for sure.
Yeah, we didn't get to gold there, but hey, we got damn close.
Did you get gold in Canada?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Gold, absolutely. And actually, I'm told that we actually hit platinum, but never got the reward. Mm. We never got the trophy yet.
Right? But we hit 100,000.
Yeah, see, that doesn't
surpassed 100,000.
And that's platinum in Canada. Platinum, 50,000 is gold. But that doesn't surprise me, because like I said, everybody had that record.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the cruise in a little bit, but when I announced that Kick-Ax was on the cruise, I got people from all around the world.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it was a worldwide deal.
Yeah. Worldwide deal, but it's not just Canada. It's been, I love Kick-Ax. I can't believe this is Kick-Ax, and this is so great. So you did have, that album was a real big statement for you guys.
We had one song in Warsaw, Poland at one point in time.
Dreaming About You.
Why was that never released as a single?
I don't know. It also was top 10 for like 12 weeks in San Francisco. We won't get into why. But
I thought it was Dreaming About
Brian.
Hugh. Dreaming About Hugh.
Dreaming About Hugh?
Dreaming About Hugh. H-U-G-H.
For some reason, it was a regional hit in Northern Cal. But
Dreaming About Hugh. It was really big amongst the Playboy Playmates for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Dreaming About Hugh. And that's what I'm saying, because like you mentioned, you did the Priest tour, and then it follows up with the Whitesnake tour. Ray, can you go into the door there? I think we got some wine coming in. Okay. See, they knew Kick-Ax is in here. They're delivering alcohol to us. So there was the Whitesnake tour, which was huge, because that was sorry, it wasn't Whitesnake. It was Quiet Riot,
Whitesnake yeah.
and Kick-Ax.
Hey,
and there we go. A free bottle. You can just put it right there. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much. What a great day. The international rock band Kick-Ax is here. Oh, okay. She's excited about that. Thank you. No, it's good. Thank you. We'll enjoy that in a bit. Appreciate it. It's okay. Do you guys like wine? You guys?
Absolutely.
Please open it up. Please. Yeah. They got a platinum record in Canada. Here in this country. I forgot where we were. Tell us about the Quiet Riot Whitesnake tour and how that came about. Same thing?
Scorpions was in
Oh, there were Scorpions too.
Yeah, Scorpions was in there as well.
Yeah, at the very beginning it was Scorpions. Yeah, Scorpions, Quiet Riot, Kick-Ax. And then it was Scorpions, Kick-Ax. And then I don't know what happened with...
But this is Scorpions now, once again, at the height of their powers as well.
Oh, we tell
us a little bit, what did you learn from the Scorps? That's a little bit more of a party tour than Priest, I would imagine.
Those guys were
they know how to party.
Top of their game. But yeah, we actually got an encore at the old Montreal Forum.
Oh, speaking of Montreal Forum. Yeah, we did sell that out. It wasn't just us. Scorpions were there,
Scorpions.
Too.
Yeah, yeah. And Scorpions.
But what was really cool is they set up the Montreal Canadiens players' bench. They set a rider up in there for us. So we hung out on the bench and watched Scorpions show.
Mm. It was weird.
Wine and cheese and everything.
Well, that's right, yeah.
What a memory, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Oh.
Well, once again, it's this band that you watched growing up or in the business, and now you're playing with them.
And the Montreal Canadiens as well.
Even better, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
for all the hockey fans out there.
Were the Scorpions... was this a band that would spend time with you guys and hang out with you?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, they're crazy Germans.
Yeah.
And in Quebec City, we went tearing up old town Quebec City.
It was like a bar, but it was a house.
But it was cobblestones and iron railings. And they threw us out because Scorpions were trying to order beer in German. We're trying to order beer in English, and they just got fed up. The French, they just said, no, get out, get out.
Like a living room couch?
Yeah, they just threw us out and said, no, you can't be here. Go away.
Who are the Scorpions?
Klaus Mein is a Scorpion. Yeah. You know, like, get out.
But this is all happening in the States, too. Like, we're talking about a very, Canadian-centric band, but the Scorps tour was in the States. And
We played with them down there in Ohio, through Ohio and stuff.
Now, are the radio stations in the States that are jumping on you guys and picking you up as
they
well?
We had tracking that,
We had good, again, with the stuff that the groundwork that Quiet Riot laid down. Mm-hmm. There was a great network of radio stations ready to play whatever Pasha had next. Mm-hmm. So, we had good exposure before we got there for sure, yeah, which was good, which was great.
And then you guys did a couple shows even with Metallica.
That's right,
too. Later on, yeah.
Now, this is something I never knew until I read. There's a website, the Kickaxe website that we talked about.
Yeah,
and actually, Dean Mullen said, hey, look, they played with Metallica? Like, really?
Yes, and, we did.
What's the connection there?
Howard Ungerleiter, the lighting director for Rush.
Because gosh, he might still be with them, I think.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
What a great guy.
Yeah.
He was there at the beginning. He was there right to the end. But yeah, it's wrapped for them. But
right,
Howard... He took a liking to Kickaxe when we first played in Toronto.
He made us a home cooked meal one.
Yeah, yeah. He took us to his house, but we didn't have a clue who he was. But we were playing this dive on Yonge Street. I shouldn't say dive; it was an iconic dive.
Lee's Palace, the Gasworks.
Gasworks, yeah.
The Gasworks, and
it's not a dive. It was excellent.
Oh no, that's a dive.
You couldn't see as much because you're behind the drums.
That's right. You were sheltered. But anyways, so he's palling us out, and he starts telling us about, yeah, he's branching out, you know, from the Rush thing, and he discovered this band in San Francisco, Metallica. Mm. This is where we first heard about Metallica, was from Howard Ungerleiter.
Mm.
Anyways, as time goes by, he facilitated us doing some opening shows for Rush in Western Canada. And again, he goes, yeah, remember I was telling you about that band Metallica? And I go, yeah, we kind of see that they're on the up and up. Ride the Lightning, okay, great. He goes, yeah, they got a new record coming out. It was the one with the crosses on it.
Master of Puppets.
Master of Puppets. Yeah. How could I forget?
Mm-hmm.
And Cliff had just tragically died in that bus accident in Scandinavia somewhere. And so he says, yeah, well, you know, I'm going to talk to your manager. I really think it'd work well. You guys, you know, touring with these guys from San Francisco. Yeah, okay, we'll give it a go. And we quit.
Oh, really?
It was rough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like 98% teenage males throwing things and spitting.
Wow.
And we came out all guns blazing, the heaviest stuff we had. I think we opened with Heavy Metal Shuffle. I mean, it's usually our closing tune.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
we just kept playing that over and over.
Cause for Alarm, Heavy Metal Shuffle. Cause for Alarm, Heavy Metal Shuffle.
The first couple songs, but then the stuff's raining down, and it's just like, wow, this is abuse, man. a totally different world than opening for, you know, Royalty.
Well, when you're talking with Scorpions and Priest, that's the Kickaxe vibe.
A little more so, yeah.
And people forget about this because I was, once again, there at that time as a fan. Metallica was crushingly heavy.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There was Motorhead, and Metallica was even above that.
Yeah.
Now, where Metallica's played in every hockey rink and every radio station, they're almost like, you know, like Whitesnake used to be.
Rock got a hold of them, yeah.
Sure.
Mellowed out, yeah.
So to open for them at the time, playing, you know, kind of
Puppets.
Heavy tunes, but not thrash tunes. Yeah.
They didn't know what a harmony was.
Right.
Oh, no,
there's no harmony.
They were still pretty raw at this point, like I was saying.
Yeah.
And we just said, thanks, but no thanks, boys. We're out of here. You know, it was just too...
Is that what happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We walked.
No one tells you anything, man. No.
Yeah, I think we lived through three dates. They were all in Ontario, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With Metal Church or something?
Yeah, Metal Church was part of the bill, too.
I was calling them Aluminum Cathedral.
Aluminum Cathedral.
It's funny because I saw that tour at the Playhouse Theater in Winnipeg.
Yeah, we were
Metallica.
On it by then.
You guys were gone at that point.
We said skip.
So had you not skipped, you would have been there.
Yeah, had we not been barraged with garbage, you know. Yeah, we would still have been. I didn't understand it. It was just.
It's funny though because the Playhouse Theater is where, and you mentioned this earlier, where I saw you guys Kickaxe headlining. The one time I say headline because I saw you open for. The Quiet Riot gig.
Right.
And then I saw you open for Triumph
in
the big arena. And that I specifically went only to see Kickaxe. And I remember it's like, it's like whatever the ticket was, $20. It's like, I don't have $20, but I want to see Kickaxe. I don't care about, no offense, I don't care about Triumph, but I paid my $20 to go see Kickaxe. And then I stayed for Triumph, but I was like, I wish, couldn't Kickaxe play longer? Can Kickaxe get an hour and a half and Triumph gets 30 minutes?
Nice.
So you guys did a headlining tour for Welcome to the Club.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And there was a contest in the Winnipeg Sun where if you clip the thing out of the paper, put your name on it, you send it in. If they pick you, you get to meet Kick-Ax backstage and you get to sing on stage with them. So I didn't win, but my friend, this guy's name was David Birds, B-U-R-D-Z. Birds. He won. Wow. And he's like, well, who's the biggest Kick-Ax fan? I know, I'll take Chris. So we went and I got to sing with a little help from my friends on stage with you guys.
That's right.
And people laughed at me for years because I was pushing everybody else out of the way like, to get to the front of the mic.
You actually muscled in on my microphone on stage, Chris. I remember it.
You remember who was that little asshole in Winnipeg? It was you?
No. And I even talked to our manager after. I said, I thought it was just supposed to be chicks that won the contest. Little did I know all these years later we'd be
stilettos or nothing. And,
yeah. You know, but at the time, yeah, you were so on stage, but
I was there.
Yeah.
So you guys
singing in my mic.
You guys would do this every night, have like a contest with people singing on stage.
Everybody yes, break all every the city we were
pedals. Yeah, with chords. for that second album. Yeah,
right.
Something was arranged. Did, yeah.
That was at the Playhouse.
I think it was in the theater.
Is that where the guitars were taken at the end of the show?
At the end of the show, the Winnipeg Sheriff's Department seized all of our equipment
in Winnipeg. That
yeah, that very night.
What happened?
I wrote a song about it.
That's a long story.
Hey. You wrote a song about it?
Yeah, it's called Rockin' Days.
Oh, yeah, from Kick-Ax 4.
If you listen to that, all the lyrics of that, it just grabs
Give me that guitar, boy. That cop took my axe bass right off me, and I thought it was a road crew guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know, he's wearing a gun. You know? Yeah. That's not road crew, or unless he's, from another crew.
Yeah.
Well, I won't name names.
So they walked on stage and confiscated your gear.
Well, right? After we were done.
After the encore.
Back in the dressing room.
They were all backstage waiting to pounce. And they loaded up a 45-foot or whatever it was.
We had no idea what was going on until they said, well, you haven't paid any of your bills. And we thought everything was getting paid.
Put the numbers together here. I think the management was not paying the bills that you thought they were going to be
paying. That's right.
Yeah. And because it was Kick-Ax's debt, they came and took your gear.
Personally. They did. Yeah. They took everything. And back then, like you say, we were headlining, so we had everything on the line. It was on everything's riding on our ass, you know. Everybody still got to pay all these for semi trucks.
Everything.
Oh yeah, buses.
The show.
Yeah. What did you guys? I mean, obviously, how do you feel is an Oprah question, but what were you guys thinking at this point in time?
Disbelief.
Dumbfounded.
We
thought it was getting paid, and it wasn't. And then we had to go to Thunder Bay the next night. So we did end up playing there because the PA wasn't ours, so they didn't confiscate that. The lighting show was still coming along.
Our guitars, drums were taken.
Everything was taken. So
stage gear. It was amplifiers.
So bad. If you listen to the song, how I would describe it.
Mm-hmm.
You go ahead. You tell the story right now while you got everyone's attention.
Well, we got to Thunder Bay and we had no equipment. So we had to play in the backup band's equipment.
White Wolf.
This wasn't White Wolf. This was a local basement Thunder Bay band.
White Wolf was on tour with us at that time.
It was just a one-off for Winnipeg. Winnipeg. Yeah. I don't know why I remember White Wolf.
They were there that night.
They opened the...
And when they saw the sheriff's backstage, because, their dressing rooms and stuff, they're going, oh my God, we got to get away from these Kick-Ax guys. They're connected to the mafia or something because they're all going down.
So the next day, we just had a local backup...
In Thunder Bay.
Yeah, it was just a small little teeny kid. And I got this massive... huge kit that
because you had the big toms
Octobons.
And then I had one little tom like this the next day, and I was just going, listen to the lyrics of that song.
Got a runner, one of the venue runners, to put me in his van, and we went to two pawn shops, and I rented like a PV 212 50 watt thing, like just. I had no idea what we were in for. We had to have some kind of amps. So the pawn shop rented us for a day.
Go ahead, Ray.
No, I was going to say, this was Thunder Bay, Ontario in 1985. Yeah. It was a pretty rough town.
And also, too, for the extra little slap in the face, I believe it was in like January.
Yeah, it was winter time, I believe.
So it's like minus 30.
For
crazy reason, the fans still loved us. They didn't even seem to notice.
We still get letters today. Oh, I was at the Thunder Bay show. It was awesome.
But this is where you become a pro. You know what I mean? Like, I have this light up jacket that I wear, and sometimes it doesn't work. The lights go out. I told Paul Stanley, he goes, you know, you're better than a lighted jacket. He goes, sometimes on my ride out into the thing on Love Gunning, I get stuck there hanging like laundry. And he's like, are you better than that or not? You guys are a great band. Okay, so your gear wasn't up to snuff, but the kid in the front row probably never even realized it. Exactly. Kick Axe is here, right?
Yeah, yeah. We showed up. That's all that mattered.
Did you finish the tour? Did you get your stuff back?
It ended there.
That was the last show of that leg,
Because so we got word from our legal defense team that we were in a lot of trouble legally, that there was a federal government or whatever, there was a government seal on the trailer at a compound in Winnipeg behind barbed wire. Controlled by the government, and because we were in a lot of trouble
because the bills that you owed.
Yeah.
Yes.
How much money did you owe? How much did you owe?
Oh my gosh.
He wasn't paying anything. Not even the insurance.
And we sent him every dime after.
The
road guy just sent all the money.
It's the classic, unclassic rock and roll story.
Yeah.
Same reason why the Beatles had none of their publishing.
Right.
Dick James signed them to a deal when they were 17 and never gave it back for 40 years or whatever it was.
Had to fight for it back.
So you guys basically were under the assumption that you're getting taken care of. You weren't. And then suddenly you lose all your stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just like that.
Yeah, it's a real
nightmare. What was, because, and obviously you mentioned Streetheart. I know there were some issues. What was the deal? Because apparently, and you don't have to go too much into it, apparently Spencer Proffer wasn't the best guy in the world either.
Apparently.
They were certainly partners in crime, to coin a phrase, but he was also, you know, down in the States, he was not only the studio where we recorded the stuff, but he was also the record company, also the publisher. So it's, you know, it's three hats that are, you know, worn by the same person, that which takes huge chunks of the pie, right?
Sure. And he had you guys writing songs for Wasp.
Oh,
and songs for King Cobra.
A couple tunes.
King Cobra's only two good songs on that record were Kick Axe, Hunger, and I never realized it until you saw it on the record. Like, holy shit, Hunger is Kick Axe, Piece of the Rock is Kick Axe. Yeah. Are those songs that you had submitted that he said, we're not going to use them, and gave them to somebody else? Or did you know they were going to those bands?
Well, we wrote those songs when we were there.
We didn't know they were going to them. No.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
No. He actually says, I'm going to Aspen. I'm going skiing in Aspen for the weekend. Here's the keys to Pasha. And he gave us his Swiss engineer Hans Peter Huber,
who's great.
So we got the keys to the Ferrari,
so we just sat there.
So we stayed in the studio all weekend eating Astro Burgers.
You mentioned that twice so far.
Yeah, well, right next door was Astro
Burgers. He got traumatized because a roach ran out of his burger on the
cockroaches had hood ornaments on them. Yeah. But anyways, I loved it. And so he says, write me some songs. I got Black Sabbath coming in here after you guys.
Mm.
And I said, oh, okay. Yeah, that's Hunger came that weekend. Piece of the Rock.
Up the Creek soundtrack, he wanted us to do that too. But I guess that was a different...
Yeah, Up the Creek was already underway.
Yeah.
But then there was I know the Wasp record, there was a couple on that. And then there's the infamous Transformers.
Transformers.
Scotty Brothers thing.
Shady thing there.
We weren't even allowed to be called Kick-Ass.
He changed our name without even telling us he was doing this.
So that would have something to do with making more money.
Because there's two songs on the and we're talking cartoon Transformers from the
80s. Original.
There's two songs on it. Both of them are really cool. And the band is Spectre General.
Spectre General.
Why? And you said they changed the name for money purposes?
We don't even know.
We don't know why they changed it.
God. We were told that Walmart wouldn't take the album. I seem to remember this, that they wouldn't take the album because of the name Kick Axe.
Oh, that's right. There is
controversial, I guess.
Right, that, it doesn't that's sound back right. when sounds. There was all those PMRC? Women from the... Yeah, yeah. I remember Dee Snider stood up to them really well in Congress or whatever the heck.
So I could be wrong. Maybe that was
real. But it's funny, though, and just to say another thing, like in 1984, Kick Axe...
It was pretty raunchy.
...was pretty raunchy. Like, it seriously was.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to Michael Sweet from Stryper a couple of days ago. To Hell with the Devil.
Yeah.
Was so controversial.
Yeah, exactly.
Kick Ass. So controversial, right? Yeah. And I just put it together a while ago. It's not just Kick Ass. It's a pickaxe crossed with a kick ass. But people were like, your shirt says Kick Axe on it. You can't wear that to school. Well, I'm going to wear it to school, Mom. I don't care.
Rebellion, right?
But I mean, so that might be the reason because of that.
Yeah, possibly. But it was, I think, it's also just a way to funnel all the proceeds from that
away from
us and some entity called Spectre General.
Sure. Well, the one song, they were completely successful in scooping up all the publishing, but nothing's going to stand in our way. Got swiped out from under us.
Was that your song?
Yeah,
it was our song. You wrote it.
Yeah. Hunger though was already stamped. And everything, and the Black Sabbath guys heard it, liked it, but then Ian Gillan quit to go back to Perfect Strangers,
the Deep Purple thing. Yeah,
so that fell, and that's how King Cobra got their hands on it. But it was already a done deal with all the publishing, and the songwriting credits were already written in blood. Mm. But the other song that wound up, Nothing's Gonna Stand in Our Way, which I love that song. Mm. That one got swiped.
Gone forever.
And it ended up with a guy from Australia, and people think that he wrote this song. I have to pull myself away from my computer when I'm looking at this stuff on YouTube. Yeah, Kickaxe stole John Farnham's song.
John Farnham.
And I'm going, yeah, sure.
Ooh. We did.
Sure, I mean, we did.
It's a rock and roll story, and like, I mean, obviously, you guys now, you play shows now, and you're back playing. Obviously, it bugs you and bothers you that these things happen. But it happened to so many bands.
Countless
bands, right?
You've got to move on.
It's sure. Almost as young guys, you got this dream, and then somebody came, and it's like that happens to so many bands over the years.
A lot of sharks.
The only bad thing about it is how we ended. We couldn't play anymore. We tried to play. And everywhere we played, the sheriff would show up and take all
court
our money.
Court orders.
Really?
Everywhere. Oh, yeah, it was brutal.
So we were forced to go into bankruptcy, and we weren't allowed to play for 7 years. Yeah. So,
wow.
So what do you do?
That's that it.
That's it.
You know, it's funny because it's, well, funny is not the word, but every record you guys did was different, but all in a good way. You know what I mean? Like, Welcome to the Club is not as much. There's some, if you're going like whatever the word is, heavy rock freestyle,
yeah,
melodic. Yeah. And Welcome to the Club had that, but the I remember when it opened up with Welcome to the Club. It's such a different song.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
like with the acoustic intro to start the second record, that takes a lot of balls. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It was on purpose.
Go ahead there. Rah, rah.
Sure. Listen, it's a great tune, but when I'm expecting heavy metal shuffle, and it starts with like, and then, and so you had that element of it. And then I know that you weren't there for Rock the World. Rock the World was very, very proggy.
That's crazy.
That almost, like, I still don't know what a Devicon is, and I've been looking for years.
Yeah, when you find out, let me know.
Yeah, right. Now there's I looked in encyclopedia, now there's Wikipedia, Google. No one really knows exactly what it is, but everything was always different. Like musically, even with all this shit that was going on from a business standpoint, artistically and creatively, the band was always great.
Yeah,
you were able to separate
Devicon
the two.
Devicon is just a strong name that somebody you're looking up to.
Is it George?
Larry came up.
Devicon.
Yeah.
I believe it's a realm in a science fiction book that Larry read, high on mushrooms outside of Houston, Texas or something. But
you like that song, I heard.
I love it. Rick was talking. I love that song.
That's a cool tune. Yeah.
I mean, it was the drums on it are crazy. It's
wicked.
You know? Yeah. Crazy, yeah, great exactly. Guitars.
The musicianship on an album.
Yeah, insane. That's what I'm saying. It was every record was different from the
but
last.
They let us go. We didn't have them going, hey, because we produced.
We made that record ourselves.
So no one's going, you can't do that. Spencer probably, you just stay four on the floor and you don't do that.
Yes.
There was nobody.
Here we go.
You were gone at that point, Ray. What predicated you leaving at that point?
Well.
Girlfriend.
A girlfriend whose mother was dying, you know,
gotcha,
cancer and stuff. And we were, you know, it was, you know, I guess a reflective time where you're sitting in a Denny's in North Bay, Ontario, you know, and you're thinking, well, last year we were opening up for the Scorpions. This year we're, you know, in North Bay, Ontario, and there was the issues at home. So it seemed at the time.
And that is something that I noticed, like reading once again this website, all the tours you had for Vices. And then those tours then weren't there for Welcome to the Club. Was that a record company thing? That
it's a lot of that. Yeah, like I say, we're, you know, we're the top of the priority of the promo company. We got the top budget for all the promo, and then you know, the next year it was another different band.
There's
it was
nothing you can do about that. It's just like the tide rolls in, the tide rolls out. You know, it's
and like you said, once again, I mean, it wasn't due to the quality of the band.
Yeah.
Going down.
It's just a push behind to push it to radio, it to media.
All being said, though, I mean, you know, we did get onto some decent things here and there. They just weren't of the extensive coast to coast variety.
With the name value of like the Scorps, right?
Yeah. Like we did 39 dates with Quiet Riot, Whitesnake. We did 35 dates with Judas Priest, and coast to coast, and they sort of dovetailed into each other. So you think, well, this is how my life's going to be for the rest of my life.
Because what are you, 23 years old? 24,
22, 23. Yeah. Just whippersnappers thinking, okay, all that hard work's paying off.
This is how it's going to be forever.
Yeah, but it gets tougher. But yeah, we did some dates with Rush, though.
I really enjoyed that, which was huge.
That's a good mix for you guys.
Although I came around a corner backstage, and Getty was right in my face. He scared the hell out of me.
You almost killed him. That poor guy. He's like a librarian. You've probably met Getty.
Only one time.
Okay.
Yeah. But like you said,
very mild mannered.
Very mild mannered.
Just a wonderful human being.
Yeah. They all are.
And last thing he needed to see was Brian coming around the corner in soggy leather. You know. Anyways, we'll leave it at that. Sorry, Getty. I'm on the record as saying sorry officially.
But you guys also had, like, I remember you had all the hair extensions in there.
Yeah, at that point, that's right.
It was the time.
Yes.
Anything to be wild.
Another story is I had a camera at that Kick-Ax show I went to where I got to sing on stage. And this was not even the Snaps camera. It was an old school, probably a Kodak, where you put the film in the back.
Like a Brownie?
And you shut it. Yeah. It wasn't, and you shut it, and you take your pictures, and you take the film out, and you take it in.
Yeah.
I had all these great pictures. I remember I remember when there was George, I was right in the front row, and he was just like singing right in my face on my camera.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Oh, dude, and like, great frontman, dude. George was great frontman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great singer, great frontman. So it was all over. You guys were all rocking. Everyone was so cool. I remember everyone was like, just like, hey, how you doing? Big pictures. And even though I wasn't a chick, there's still a great picture of everybody.
Hey.
And I went to take the film in, and nothing turned out.
Oh, man.
And I remember sitting in class drawing every picture that I can remember
in
taking.
Your mind.
I took one of Ray over here, and there's one of Victor there. And there's one.
That's so heartbreaking back then, you know, when that film was so.
It was in backwards.
You know,
you didn't
just
know.
In the ether.
You didn't know. It's not like that now. Take the picture on your cell phone, I'll put a filter on it, and everybody looks
totally
great.
Yeah.
Can you alter it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there was heartbreak back then with pictures for sure.
Tell kids that these days, they won't believe you.
They don't get it. They don't get it, right? When you finally, like you said, when did you realize that you couldn't, like, when did this 7-year ban happen?
Okay, the final straw was in Winnipeg, at a place called The Zoo.
The Zoo, I used to hang out there all the time.
Green zoned it.
Green Brothers.
And
what's the Green Brothers, the promoter?
That they
own. The
gotcha.
Yeah.
And we were trying to do right by everybody. So when we came into town, there was a company called, was it Wessa? Westside Lighting
and Bank Walks.
Yeah. So some during Winnipeg the day, companies. I think you and Larry went down there with a payment.
Yes.
But the Weasels already planned the sheriffs coming down that night.
Assassination.
Looked them right in the eyes and just didn't say anything. Just took the money, and knowing well they're going to take all their money later that night.
That the sheriffs were coming with a court order to take everything again. They took our money. They could have had the balls and the whatever you want.
Decency
to say, look, boys, it's too late.
We already have the sheriffs coming.
They took the money and smiled their fake smiles, and that put us out of business. We didn't even have gas money for the bus.
Yeah, once we finished that night there, they took it all, and that was it.
I think we passed a hat in the cafeteria to raise some gas money to get back to Saskatchewan.
I think it was my credit card.
Parents' house.
Yeah.
But and once again, this is not something where it's a positive story in the end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I want you guys that are listening, like, this, once again, this band was the band. Like, you guys were the opening band at that time.
Yeah.
So for this to go down, like you said, you're passing the hat. but you guys still rocked, and this is the real dedication of a great rock and roll band.
Never
give up, and sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. But the integrity of the band, because like I said, there's guys like every guy in Slash's band now is a kickass, Fitz and Kearns and all the guys. Like, you guys have an influence
on them,
on a whole
sure.
generation of people that got into music because of it. You know, and actually, I have great respect for the fact that it didn't go the way you wanted it to, but you always held your heads up and made it to the gig, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's important.
We just kept going and kept going until we got batted down so hard we weren't, it was impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, you know, if somebody, you know, some prophet would have laid it all out for us and go, okay, this is how it's going to go for the next 2 years. This is exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I think all of us would have probably said, sure, okay, let's go.
Yeah, let's do it anyways. If someone would have told you when you're going to sign this deal for the Vices record, you're going to get all this steam, and then this is going to happen, this is going to happen, and it's going to end up with the sheriff stealing all your shit and kicking you out of the venue, you might go, that's pretty rock and roll.
Totally.
Let me sign twice, right?
Do you need a blood sample with that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Quick story. I remember one time watching a random video, and were you in like Rock and Hide or something like that?
I was a mercenary guitar player. Yeah, hired gun.
I remember just one time watching, like, that's Raymond Arthur Harvey.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, there was a show we did at the Spectrum in Montreal. It was like a filmed MTV or Much Music.
Gotcha.
Story. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was a fun little time.
Just, yeah, you know, Bob's a great guy.
He was.
Yeah, he's a very, very cool guy. Now, a question I want to ask you as we start to wind down. Victor talking about, and by the way, my cousin and I used to think your name was Victor Large when we were kids. So Large. Victor Large, it's a Victor Langley.
That's what Langley. Every woman said.
That's what Paul said. That's what every woman said. Oh, yeah. Where did the idea come for this crazy bass? It's an axe, kind of a, it almost looks like a spaceship.
That's I called it the space bass. All my guitars were built by this crazy man, a mad scientist in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Fury Guitars, Glenn McDougall, rest in peace.
What a great guy.
Yeah, yeah, he was a mad scientist, perfectionist. And he's been building my guitars since the 70s when I first discovered this guy at a music store in Saskatoon. He was just too weird to pass up. Sort of like a Nikolai Tesla of guitar makers.
Inventor, yeah.
And I went to his shop, and he had all these avant-garde designs. Crazy enough, his normal ones were crazy enough. I still play one of his original designs, my Black Fury. But I saw this drawing he had, and I said, are you ever going to build that? And if you do, build it for me and me alone, because it's a cross between a spaceship and an axe. And Star Wars had just come out. And they said, you know, that it'd be crazy, crazy cool to have something like that on stage for a stage show. He says, no, I'll never do it. I said, no, you must. You must. And then as our career advanced and we got signed to a record deal, I sent him a postcard from Los Angeles. We're recording. I said, now will you make this, Glenn? And he goes, you're in Hollywood? I said, yeah, I told you I was gonna be a somebody and that I'd take you along for the ride. He says, okay, I'll build it. He did. He built it. I'm still playing that guitar today.
Ever since.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I'm going to bring it on the cruise.
Yes. Todd Kearns and I, Todd plays for Slash's band.
Right.
We have been trying. Somebody had a Fury for sale on like a eBay or something. And we were like,
where?
I don't remember. He found it. He goes like, dude, like, do
so
like,
you got one stolen too, right?
Several stolen.
It might, whatever it was. And I was like, let's go halves on this. Like, we need to have a Fury. Well, who gets to keep it? I said, I don't care. You can keep it. Just send me pictures of it once in a while. But whatever. Like, we want a Fury. We must find a Fury bass because no one has a bass like that.
Yeah, I got five. I got one like that, but I got five Fury guitars.
How does it play? How's the action on it?
Ooh. It's my baby.
You must love it, yeah.
The black one actually is built specifically, hands down, for my hand, for my fret hand. But
it's not crazy enough, though.
Yeah, it's. I'm stuck. Since the rock, the On the Road to Rock video, I debuted it. That guitar was debuted. Now, tell me if I'm wrong, guys. I think for the Priest tour.
Yeah.
He had it ready for the Priest tour.
Because it's in the On the Road Rock video.
Yeah, I had it on the Judas Priest tour. He had it ready. I had to go to Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, which is an exotic locale.
Isn't it?
And pick this thing up and then fly back wherever it was. But I grabbed it and I've been stuck with it ever since. But
It's your gimmick.
Yeah, it's my gimmick.
It even made it on the cover of the Rock the World record.
Well, it's like 40 pounds, though. He's having a hard time with it now.
I do, it's like wearing an oak coffee table now as I advance in age. But
yeah, it's becoming the name of it is the coffee table, not the space.
It's very heavy. It's solid, solid Canadian maple.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's talk about when the band got back together again, because I remember once again, like you said, you were gone for the longest time. And then suddenly you hear, rumblings that Kickax is doing some other stuff and you guys did another record and now you're playing shows. And what was kind of the reunion process of that? And also, too, because we talk about, once again, George Kristen, great singer, great frontman, but now you have Daniel, who's those notes that George sang are not easy and Daniel nails them. I listen, we watch, we analyze because I'm a hardcore fan. Well, who's this Daniel Nargang? How good is he? Dude, he's good. Mm-hmm. What kind of led you guys the concept of reuniting, and then how do you find a new singer for the band?
Well, it was very, very tough. We tried for about 5 years, guys. 5 years poking at George Kristen. Come on, CBS is re-releasing these things. It was at that time the 20th anniversary of Vices. So.
George took it really hard.
Took it really hard when you guys had to stop.
It was devastating.
It's like your mother and father dying in a car crash.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So he took it the worst. He just couldn't get over the betrayal, of our manager. It was utter just despicable betrayal. And hey, we're all homeless. Let's call it what it was. We were seriously actually kicked to the curb, literally.
Did you ever talk to Stratacek and say, what
the No, dude? Yeah, the RCMP tracked him to the Dominican Republic.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, he skipped.
And by the way, once again, this is the same guy that was managing Streetheart and did the same thing to that great band as well.
Yeah, we don't know what drove him to do such things.
Right.
He was like a big brother to everybody. I know Streetheart guys thought of him as their big brother, same as us. And let's be clear, he did a lot of wonderful things, a lot of things we never would have gotten to without his hard work. But in the end, we're kicking a dead horse here.
So George took it bad. So you're trying to get him to come back.
He just refused.
No dice.
So now here's an interesting sideline. My first guy that I wanted to talk to, and I mentioned this, I believe, to Raymond M. Bryan and Larry for sure, was Todd Kearns. I said, hey, a Saskatchewan boy,
Lynn Lake.
It's
got to be a prairie guy.
It's Lynn Lake, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it's Lanigan, Saskatchewan.
Lanigan, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, which is crazy. Like large.
Yeah, Victor Lanigan, Victor Large.
But that's who I was, I was thinking, that would be the way to go. But he had stuff going on.
Is that Todd Kearns on the phone? He might still want the gig.
Be listening in.
He might still want it.
During Winnipeg tonight.
Yeah, I know. It's Slash's birthday.
Yes, that's right. Happy birthday.
so you wanted to talk about Todd?
Top of the list, yeah. And then, no, that wasn't going to fly. So I knew Danny in Regina.
And meanwhile, everyone else is on board. You, Brian, your brother, Larry, Raymond, you're back in the fold.
Yeah, back in there.
Just if we could just get George to believe, that this it won't end terribly.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, was his greatest fear.
What he told me, he said, I have no problem being on the album whatsoever, Brian. Just sample my voice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was willing to sing, to record, but he wanted nothing to do with live performance.
Right.
And which is, hey, let's face it, that's the realities.
That's the bread and butter of the business
genre,
now.
That era, that's what you do. You get out and play.
Yeah. But to be fair, after that all, went down, he got into the movie, in the business, and he was on location doing, that was his business now.
Was he doing some kind of teching for
location sound? Yeah. Like he was the guy running the booms and running, you know,
he was busy.
He's busy. Oh. And those kind of shoots, you're going in for 16-hour days for weeks at a time, and you just can't say, "Hey, I got a tour I got to go on for a week, so I'll be back in a week." They say, "No, you're not coming
right,
back."
Right.
So it's that kind of business, right?
I gotcha.
We'll fill in the blank there a bit. He did stay in the circus, as we call it, like our old front of house and tour manager Dan Fraser started a record company called Network and had all this stuff going on, and George went out on the road for how long, Raymond?
Oh, years and years with Lil' Affair.
He was like the babysitter for Avril.
Yeah, I know he was doing some stuff. Was he vocal coaching Avril or something?
Doing some of that, yeah.
Whatever needed to be done, right?
Tour managing, he was living the life.
Still behind the scenes.
Still in the business.
Yeah,
and then when he came back to Vancouver after running years of the Avril show, he got into the film side of things with the audio side,
that's the technical thing.
Mm-hmm. And that's when these offers started coming in. Okay, CBS Sony was doing a 20th anniversary commemorative of Vice's Welcome to the Club re-release things. Would we want to do some shows to commemorate this? And he just couldn't commit to it because now he had committed to the film industry in Vancouver. So. Mm-hmm. For all those that don't know, Vancouver is Hollywood North. Anyways,
we're
all involved in some way. but I can't get into that.
It's called my mortgage, yes.
Yeah.
So George says, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So once again, this is not an easy gig to fill because the guy's voice is the melody. It's like when Quiet Riot's problem trying to replace Dubrow. Exactly. They finally got James Durbin. Great singer. He can hit those notes because you cannot go back out and not have a guy that's going to hit, like, you know, amps on 10, ears are screaming. I don't know what an octave that is, but it's a high octave. Exactly.
Well, and again, Danny, he fit the bill. He's a Regina, Saskatchewan lad, like all of us. And so it just worked like a glove. I went up to him, and it was his birthday, and I went back home for a while to watch over the parents, and it was his birthday, and I went to his birthday party, and then I realized I forgot to get him a present. So when I walked up to everyone, he's in the gift line, everyone's giving the gift, and I said, "Danny, you know, what kind of friend am I? I didn't even get you a card or a present. Do you want to sing for Kickaxe?"
Happy birthday.
His eyes pop out and he goes, "Are you for real?" Because his first concert in his life was like what you're describing. His first ever concert was in the hometown, our hometown crowd.
Center of the Arts
in Regina. His first concert as a teenager was to see Kickaxe in front row. And I said, "No, I'm dead serious, actually. And I'll tell you more about it after your birthday party. But yeah, think it over. You don't have to answer me now." He goes, "Yes." he didn't waste 5 seconds. He said, "Yes." I said, "Well, okay, I guess we're flying to Vancouver." Here we are. That's so
when you guys, because now, once again, there's such a resurgence of rock and roll, especially from that era. And you're talking about Helix and Lee Aaron and all these great acts from that era. And I know you guys do a lot of stuff with Helix. You guys play a lot of gigs? And mostly it's always in Canada, right?
It's Canada, yeah.
Yeah. Which
and Killer Dwarves as well.
Killer Dwarves, another great band of the same ilk.
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
Great guys.
Nice guys, yeah.
Do you ever think, because this is what's going to happen, and I said this to a couple of friends of mine, when we get closer to the cruise and when people start hearing that Kickaxe is on this cruise, you're going to start getting offers from overseas. I'm just telling you right now.
I hope so.
Because Europe is totally into what you guys do.
We need to go there, yeah.
Did you ever go to Europe at all?
We didn't.
Wow.
No, but we'd be into doing that.
Because I remember, this Kickaxe website has reviews from Kerrang! Magazine and Rebel Hammer magazine.
We should have went, but again, that's a management issue. And a label issue and all of the above. But
it just never happened for us, but that's...
But that's happened. Why, like, so just, like I said, as we wind down here, but we were putting together the lineup for this cruise. They did one last year, the first one.
Oh, this is the second one.
This is the second one. So I pick part up, like, I don't have part deux. That's right.
I got it.
So I was starting to look into bands for the first one, and now there's rock and roll cruises where these bands get paid ridiculous amounts of money.
Yeah.
My budget is different because it's wrestling, it's rock and roll, it's comedy, it's
everything.
It's everything. So I can't afford, you know, 300 grand for Alice Cooper.
No.
Right? Not even close. So I have to put together a lineup of bands that I enjoy that have the same vibe, which is a party vibe.
Yeah.
Last time, the basic, I got, well, the basic co-headliner, because I put Fozzy on top because I know I'm not going to overcharge myself and I'm not going to screw myself.
Yeah.
Phil Campbell, nice. big friend, a good friend of mine, just wanted to be involved. He came down with the Bastard Sons, his new band, Phil from Motorhead, obviously.
Yeah.
And then Corey Taylor's girlfriend was booked in one of these other things, so I had Corey Taylor as well. Great lineup of bands, and it's not killing the bottom line, but everybody's rocking. So when we're putting together the lineup for this cruise, we had some ideas, and I was like, you know what? It's my cruise. I love Kick-Ax. I want Kick-Ax. Let's get Kick-Ax going.
Nice.
So I text Fitz. I'm like, do you got Victor Large's number? And he did, and we started talking. So how do you guys feel about doing this cruise? It's a completely different vibe for you guys. You've never done one of these cruises.
Yeah.
And it's basically a United States crowd where a lot of people are excited to see you guys.
Yeah. They haven't seen us for how long?
Well, exactly.
Back when?
USA.
Yeah.
And some might never have seen you.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole new generation of people, of kids and
yeah, fans. Exactly.
I do get a lot of messages from the US.
We do. Yeah.
What the heck?
You know? Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
No, because you think of all the tours we mentioned, Scorpions and White Snake.
All the people we played in front of. Yeah, exactly. That only saw us maybe once.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were just gone, you know, mm-hmm. like ghosts.
Now this can all come on your cruise and have
a good
time.
Was it, I know you guys had to have some band meetings and stuff. Was it a tough decision to make to go or?
Well, cruise in Miami, not really, not for me.
Just logistics, more than anything.
Logistics, obviously, yeah. Right.
Yeah, we figured it out real quick. I was the cheerleader after you phoned me, Chris. Yeah, it's Victor here. Anyways, I just figured, well, you know, let's see if we can make it work. Yeah,
I can read a crowd pretty good, and I was like, if I just call and just let them know, like, you guys, this is so good for you to do, you got to do it.
Yeah,
you know. And I'm really excited to have you guys on board, because once again, not only one of my favorite bands, but I want other people to hear you guys. Well, and I want people to know that don't live in Regina, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, Calgary, whatever,
keep doing this
for yeah
that you guys are out there, because I'm telling you right now, they are the metal world in Germany and all these other places. Mm-hmm. I always say Germany because Germany's the
it's
one.
Still there.
They are. Yeah Germany there. Is huge. Yeah.
There's tons of festivals there. And there when they hear Kick-Ax is active, well, let's give them a call.
Let's give
which
them
is
call.
Why we have now an Instagram page for Kick-Ax.
Yes. Nice.
And we're nice. Teaching
thank you for that.
Victor. Yeah. So the point being that this is all benefiting all of us.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So I'm excited to have you guys coming on board with us.
Thanks.
Hey, we're hyped
can't
up.
Can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Another thing I have to ask you. So when I grew up, I went to Westwood Collegiate in Winnipeg. And at one point in time, there was a huge commotion, brouhaha amongst all the kids because Kick-Ax was coming to Sturgeon Creek. Now, Sturgeon Creek was the high school that was kind of down the road. It was part of our school system. Mm-hmm. But you could only get in if you went to Sturgeon Creek. And there was guys from Westwood trying to sneak in, trying to get in. And no one could get. There's one guy I know that saw the mythical Kick-Ax show in Sturgeon Creek High School. Why did you guys play Sturgeon Creek? Do you remember?
Yes, it was a promotion. Because we were just getting ready to go on tour. Welcome to Club Tour.
Yeah.
And what was the promotion?
It was a canned food drive.
Yeah, drive. That's right.
For the needy. Yeah, we were doing our community service. And but the gist was there was, you know, people in need for families that were going hungry.
And whoever came up with the most.
Whichever school. That's
whichever
right.
high school in all of Winnipeg, Canada came up with the most canned goods in their whatever.
Oh, shit.
The principal office.
That's that.
Yeah, and I remember that it was a tie. Because they waited. They
So we played two high schools.
We did play two high schools.
And for nothing.
Yeah. And
So Sturgeon Creek?
Sturgeon Creek was one, and I'm trying to remember the
St. Mary's
one.
Or
what's there's the St. Mary's.
St. James.
Well, St. James is where I'm from, so maybe St. Mary's is more apt.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Sturgeon Creek, and these guys were the skids. They were like the technical school. They were all like mechanics and stuff. Oh, hey, so they raised the most cans of food.
I guess so, yeah.
Winnipeg Sun was the judge, and they weighed everything. So I don't know, you know, maybe a can of beans weighs more than a
Spam
box of Kraft dinner.
Than chicken noodle soup.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm getting off track here. But just to answer the question quickly, Chris, we're raising much needed food for needy families, and it was coming into the Christmas cheer season, and I think it tied in with the help from my friends thing. I think because
we just wanted to play some shows to get our set together for Welcome to the Club.
So it was rehearsal.
What a cool thing though, man. Like once again, like I just saw the Chili Peppers do this a couple days ago. They played at a school in Watts, the
wow.
Watts section. Ooh,
really, eh?
Really?
And they're playing it outside, you know, it's a little high school stage, and it's the freaking Chili Peppers, and there's probably 50 kids, and 30 of them have no idea who they are. They're just watching this band, these four guys go nuts. That's what it was like to play Sturgeon. There's a guy, my friend Jeff, he went to Sturgeon, and he still says, yeah, I was there, and I was like, because no one could get in. It was ironclad. You had to go to Sturgeon to get into that gig.
Okay, so you never did see us.
I never got to go in. No.
Didn't Brent Fitz or something like that see us or something like that at high school or something?
You're right. I remember having a conversation with Brent about...
He went to John Taylor. He might have snuck into Sturgeon.
Okay, and maybe, Tim Sutton from Street Art, the drummer, seen us at his high school.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what high school he was in. I think it was St. Mary's.
That's cool that you guys are playing high schools for food.
Yeah.
You know? That's pretty cool.
Giving back to our adopted community.
Once again, that's why you had three hometowns.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good rehearsals as well.
Yeah,
exactly. So there's the answer.
And free cans of beans for any leftovers.
Oh, my God.
last couple questions for you. There's two. What's your favorite gig you ever had, and what's your favorite Kickax song to either play or maybe it's obscure? I'll start. My favorite gig obviously was the one that I got to see at the Playhouse where I was so close and I never had somebody sweat on me before. Just shorts for me. And the best Kickax song besides, well, I got to go Devicon. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brian, you answer first.
It's kind of like asking me what favorite song is like.
What's your favorite child?
Yeah.
Like, is there a gig that stands out to you? When I say Kickax gig, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I really enjoyed the first Judas Priest show, of course. I mean,
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it was Charlotte, North Carolina.
Because Harrisburg got rained out.
Yeah, it was an outdoor show that got rained out. That's what showed up.
Carolina. But
catch
Irvine
your money.
Meadows, California. Yes. It was such a beautiful summer
just
night.
Stole my
that
answer.
Really stands out. I just went in the middle of the crowd, just sat up there and was watching Judas Priest and nice cocktail in my hand and just. That summer night in Los Angeles. And
it was outdoors.
It's a beautiful venue, too. It's a great amphitheater. Yeah.
Another one that would probably be with the Scorpions and Fast Way
in Ohio.
There's probably 30,000 people, and we played at noon.
Wow.
Outdoors, and we had such a great party the night before. It was just insane. I hardly got any sleep, but it didn't matter. We're like 24, right?
You know how to play the gig. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's the beauty of being 20-something.
Yeah, exactly.
There's too many good ones, you know?
What's your favorite Kickax song to play?
To play?
If that makes it easier. Mm.
There you go.
Devicon.
Well played, sir.
Quick answer.
How about you, Vic?
Okay, well, Brian stole my favorite show, but there's so many. Let's see. So many. It won't be one of the Metallica gigs. I'm going to go with Rush at the Vancouver Pacific Coliseum.
That was a good one.
Wow.
That was
just down the road from here.
Yeah, that was because we had found our legs on it, and it was magical. And the boys in Rush...
It was cool because I looked to my right and Neil Peart was standing around doing my drum solo.
Just watching you.
They were actually on stage, Alex Lifeson, Geddy Lee.
Wow.
Neil Peart, that crazy kit, right?
What we're doing. And that was the biggest compliment on earth.
Mm-hmm.
That they would want to pay attention. Look at these guys.
Mm-hmm.
So
taking the time, because you guys know, you guys headline shows when bands, did you ever watch White Wolf play, for example, whatever. When the headliner watches the opener,
that's one of those moments where you're like, that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, for sure.
It is nice. Yeah,
I always try and take at least one show and watch, at least where they see you watch, even if it's just a song or two. When the opening band sees that, it gives them, you know, like, that's cool.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That meant a lot. And if I have to answer the trick question, favorite song to play, I'm going to go with Hellraisers.
Nice. That's a great tune. And that should have been the first single from Welcome to Mud.
It was supposed to be the opening song of the album. It was supposed to be the album title as well.
Hellraisers.
Ooh, too raunchy.
Spencer changed it in LA.
Yeah, he switched it.
Kick-Ax Hellraisers. You know what, dude? Hey, you can say yes, no, or whatever, but now hearing that, that would have been a whole different vibe.
And Hunger was supposed to be on that record, but it got snatched by the King Cobras.
You guys play that live now, though, right?
We do, absolutely.
That's a great tune.
Yeah.
Great tune. Yeah, much better when you guys sang it than when they did, too. Yeah. Raymond?
Well, I don't know, so many good shows. Mm. There was one we did in Toronto, the CNE, with Scorpions that outside. Fantastic show.
Yeah, another large.
You know, and I love playing Hellraisers too, I gotta say.
Yeah.
That's one of the tunes I brought to the band.
Did you?
Second album, yeah. And I just,
one of Raymond's flushed songs.
Out. You know, we flush out all our songs together, but that, you know, this is my core idea.
It's like making chili. Everybody gets to stir it.
Who kind of had like the riff ideas? Was it you and Larry, or did you have riffs, or everyone? Just whatever?
Yep.
It all started with drums.
A good beat.
I just started that rolling heavy metal shuffle.
And everything.
They just fell in.
It was just like, in 3 seconds, we had a song.
Yeah.
Like, what do you got next, Brian? Guys, once again, what a pleasure to have you here. When I heard I was coming to Vancouver, I said, I got to try and get Kick-Ax. Great time to hang out with you guys. And I'm really looking forward to introduce you to.
Can't wait to rock on the cruise, Chris.
Man, I'm so excited, man. Is it going to be your birthday? Is that what I heard?
It will be my birthday. Thanks for that cabin.
Yeah.
I heard I got the Rockstar cabin with a hot tub.
Free champagne. If it doesn't happen, it's not because of me.
That's a trapeze act. Something happened.
Something went wrong. It's on Gary Stravichuk cruise line. So if something goes wrong, it's not me. Seriously, guys, awesome to have you here. And we're really looking forward to having you and unleash you onto the world.
That's going to be fantastic.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Right, thanks, Chris, for having us, Chris.
All right, thanks to Kick-Ax. They're playing a hometown show this Saturday night, October 12th at Casino Regina in Regina. And the night before that, they're playing the Century Casino in Edmonton on October 11th. Two huge shows with the Killer Dwarfs, another great Canadian heavy metal band from that time frame. So go listen to Kick-Ax Vices now and get prepared to see them if you live in Regina or Edmonton. And get prepared to see them if you're on the sold-out Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager at C Part 2. When we set sail January 20th, Kick-Ax will be there. Now listen, we're completely sold out. But you still have a chance to join us on the cruise. Get on the waiting list at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And if a cabin opens up before we set sail, you will be able to join us for the vacation of a lifetime. AEW is going to be there. I'm going to be there. Fozzy's going to be there. Diamond Dallas Page doing live yoga on the ship. MVP, one-man show. Ric Flair, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac. Booker T, Charmel, Vicky Guerrero, Eddie Guerrero, Shaw Guerrero, the Vaudettes burlesque troupe. Gabriel Iglesias is the host. Craig Gass is coming aboard. So much great stuff. Farewell to Fear, Light the Torch with Howard Jones, Rubik's Cube, great 80s cover band, Killer Queen, great female queen cover band, Dave Spivak Project, my boy Jared James Nichols will be playing, the entire AEW crew, like we said, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Cody and Brandi Rhodes, Hangman Page, the Luchasaurus, John Moxley, Jungle Boy, Nyla Rose, Penelope Ford, Sammy Guevara, SCU, MJF, and Private Party will all be there for sure. Beyond the Darkness will be there telling live ghost stories around a campfire, stimulated campfire. So much stuff going on. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and sign up for the waiting list now. All right, coming up on Friday, it's 100 things every WWE fan should know and do before they die with Brian Alvarez from the Wrestling Observer, a brand new book that he wrote. Lots of great stuff in there. So we welcome Brian back to the show on Friday. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Heavy metal shuffle! Heavy metal shuffle!